On this week's 51%, we jump into the battle over the Equal Rights Amendment. And with Veterans Day approaching, we have a story about a cultural icon from World War II.
Those young men that flew those missions over Europe and all over the place, the Navy and the Air Force, those weapons were created by women. And without them, we would not have made it. And oh boy, are we due for a thank you.
Plus, we meet an artist who experiences synesthesia. I'm Allison Dunn, and this is 51%.
Wouldn't it be nice if we had an amendment to give civil rights to women? To once and for all just really lay it down from the point of view of women.
Illinois was a battleground for the fight over the Equal Rights Amendment decades ago. And as Rachel Otwell reports, it's once again earning that status.
The Equal Rights Amendment, or ERA for short, had a shot at becoming part of the Constitution in the 1970s and 80s. The ERA reads, "Equality of rights under the law shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of sex." By 1982, efforts for passage had failed to meet the congressional deadline for consideration. Efforts, however, are once again gaining steam, particularly in Illinois. Those chants are from the state capitol grounds back in 1975. And those are from a women's march this spring. Activists are now pushing for two more states to ratify to get to the required 38. They hope Congress will pass a bill lifting the 1982 deadline. Nevada voted to ratify the ERA earlier this year, so only two more states are needed. Illinois could become one of them. The state recently made news for passing another controversial measure. It expands access to taxpayer-subsidized abortions. It was hailed by progressives like Bridget Leahy, public policy director for the state chapter of Planned Parenthood, who says it makes the state a safe haven for access to reproductive health care in the Midwest.
This legislation guarantees that women will have access to safe and legal abortion in Illinois, no matter what happens at the federal level.
Some are upset that Republican Governor Bruce Rauner went against pro-life ideology to set aside tax dollars for abortion, including David Smith, who heads the conservative lobbying nonprofit, the Illinois Family Institute.
We understand that this bill could, based on the Medicaid numbers in Illinois, increase the number of abortions by 10 to 15,000 every single year. And that, with our tax money, that is really disturbing.
Like abortion, the ERA is a perennial issue that often divides politicians by party lines. But it wasn't always that way. The ERA passed Congress and went to the states for ratification when Richard Nixon was in the White House. He was a supporter. It was first drafted in 1923. Back then, not all feminists were sure about the idea. Some argued it could cost them certain privileges, especially in regards to labor. But by the late 1960s, the idea began to catch on. Mary Lee Sargent is a longtime activist who helped wage the battle in Illinois.
Without ERA, we are second-class citizens. We do not have equal rights and equal protection under the Constitution.
Sargent founded the grassroots group of second-class citizens, which carried out numerous direct actions to support the ERA. One involved writing the name of an opposing legislator, Republican George Ryan, who would later become governor, on the Capitol floor in animal blood. Getting that blood involved convincing a slaughterhouse it would be used for a Shakespeare production. Still, there was plenty of theater.
We had a rally, and while the rally was going on, 17 of us chained ourselves together in front of the doors of the Senate.
Not all ERA supporters were as militant, and rallies were held elsewhere in the state. One in 1980 involved some 10,000 people in Chicago's Grant Park. Overall, the issue had bipartisan and widespread support, coming close to reaching the needed 3/5 supermajority vote from both chambers several times. Enter Phyllis Schlafly. She led a league of proud housewives against the ERA, who passed out fresh-baked bread and pies to lawmakers while arguing against the amendment. Schlafly, an attorney who had lost a bid for Congress, went on to start the Eagle Forum, a nonprofit claiming to lead the pro-family movement. She traveled the nation with her message and was a skillful strategist. Here she is speaking with NPR host Michelle Martin in 2011.
What that amendment would do is to make all laws sex neutral. Well, the typical classic law that is not sex neutral is the draft registration law. And we were still in the Vietnam War in 1972. I had sons and daughters about age 18. My daughters thought this was the craziest thing they ever heard. You're going to have a new amendment for women, and the first thing is they'll have to sign up for the draft like their brothers.
During the decade the ERA was hotly debated, other key players came to Illinois, including Betty Friedan, author of The Feminine Mystique, a book credited with sparking the second wave of feminism in the U.S. The deadline for ratification in 1982 came and went to no avail. That hasn't stopped Jean Marie Duray, the state director of ERA Action. She says the Illinois Constitution has similar language to the ERA, which was added during the Constitutional Convention of 1970. But still,
if the Equal Rights Amendment would have been ratified back in the 1970s, it would have provided protections for women at every level of government.
She says those protections include fair pay. For her, it's a personal issue. She says her mother was sexually harassed on the job and was paid less than her male equivalents. To this day, she hears similar stories.
It bothers me when I hear these things, when I see these things firsthand, because it tells me that women are not being valued for the work that they do. They're not even being valued as human beings, and they certainly are not being valued as equal.
Terry O'Neill heads the National Organization for Women, or NOW, an organization that has fought for the ERA for decades.
Two-thirds of minimum wage workers are women, and women of color are very heavily overrepresented in minimum wage work. If we had an ERA, we could make the claim that this disproportionate impact on women of color requires a governmental response, a policy response.
But just like in years past, not all women are on board. Lori Higgins is with the Illinois Family Institute and argues women,
they are not institutionally deprived of any rights, and this ERA has nothing to do specifically with women.
Higgins says she is worried passage would mean men and women would be forced to share public spaces like locker rooms and bathrooms. State Senator Heather Staines, a Democrat from Chicago, says her most recent legislation for ratification, which passed out of a committee earlier this year, would likely have the votes needed in that chamber. However,
it's the House that didn't have the vote, so we're trying to focus on developing more support in the House for it. To get a supermajority in the House, we're going to have some Republican support. For some reason, it has become a partisan issue, which I'm working to try to stop that. I don't think there's a reason that it needs to be or should be that way, quite frankly.
Lobbyists in Illinois are also working behind the scenes to secure those votes. Terry O'Neill of NOW says the ERA is needed today as much as ever.
The ERA would be the platform for pushing forward on many policy fronts that would begin closing these gender and gender race inequalities that we see around the country.
Since the deadline for ratification passed back in 1982, it's unclear what congressional or legal action could result. Still, many activists consider fighting for ratification worth the effort in today's political climate. For 51%, I'm Rachel Otwell.
The song leading into this piece, by the way, was a live performance of Ani DiFranco singing Amendment in 2010 at the Rhinebeck, New York-based Omega Institute's annual Women in Power retreat, a retreat that has been featured on 51%.
Let an amendment put this brutal game to rest. Trust that women will still take you to their breast. Trust that women will always do their best. Trust, our differences make us stronger, not less.
A New Jersey-based magazine owned by women has canceled a women's empowerment panel following criticism because the participants were all men. SJ Magazine had titled the panel that was set to include four men as Women in Business, a Man's Point of View. The magazine says it believes it is helpful when everyone is part of the conversation on women's empowerment and feminism. But the magazine says it was never its intention to offend anyone with the November 6th event. Criticism against the panel was harsh on social media. The magazine explained that three other panels were composed of all women and said it wanted to start a discussion with men. One of the participants, New Jersey Democratic Assemblyman Lou Greenwald, had decided to withdraw because of the panel's composition. He said he would offer his seat to someone who can bring a more diverse and inclusive point of view to this critical issue. Another participant, Rowan University President Ali Hushmand, said he was delighted to be part of the panel because he has very strong feelings about promoting leadership opportunities for women. However, he said he understood why some people were concerned about an all-male panel. Another all-female panel titled Success Stories, Taking Charge Without Wearing a Suit and Tie, is set for December 4th. As summer was drawing to a close, a county fair in the Hudson Valley region of New York for the first time featured two sculptures. One in particular focused on women, Rosie the Riveter. And here's the man who accompanies and promotes the works of art and tries to get the word out about a time in history and its relevance today, Cole Kleitch.
I work with an outfit called Spirit of 45, and we're trying very hard to reinstill that spirit of unity and the victory we shared 72 years ago, and to try and remind today's generation that that kind of togetherness isn't available anytime, that spirit of 45. Well, that's a big job, so the weird way that's very effective is Seward Johnson of the Johnson Atelier lets me borrow, literally, this beautiful embracing peace sculpture of that amazing moment on August 14, 1945, when a sailor and the nurse shared in that moment of victory. And the added plus for us this year that we're so excited about, he's also lent us his brand new can-do Rosie the Riveter sculpture. So she's able to go with us, as are these two, but Rosie's the focus. And this year we're able to take her, and we're finding that people really do look for that can-do attitude. And the Rosie symbol is wonderful. What a perfect, perfect moment in our history right now to remind ourselves, of course, we can do it. So that's a way to do it.
How long have you been traveling with the sculptures, though?
I've done this for about 4 years. I've been with the sculpture and running the World War II section of the Veterans Day Parade in New York City for 3 years, and the Memorial Day Parade in Washington, the World War II section. And in the past years, we will have, as we have, the Embracing Peace. But again, this year, Rosie's going to be the center of our efforts for this Veterans Day in New York City to remind the nation once again, as the women saved us before, as perhaps they will be willing to lead us once again and remind us that, of course, we can do it. What were we thinking?
So you said you've been doing this for 4 years.
Off and on. I do teach. I'm a civics teacher. So given the dearth of civics classes, I've got to find something else to do. And if the way the joke I use is if civics is my subject and it's spinach, I'll admit it, these sculptures are about the best butter you could ask for.
Where do you teach civics?
Anywhere that'll have it. It doesn't have it, is it? But I do research at the FDR, and I've taught in federal programs in Africa and other places where, frankly, a lot of folks have a better idea how to do civics than we do.
Any surprising reactions?
Only the amount of joy and the stories they bring forth. My grandmother was a Rosie. My uncle was a Navy. And they brings forth all those things that perhaps they haven't shared with those grandkids and stuff. So the joy for me is to watch the older folks desperately try and explain to the little folks who are enthralled what they're looking at. And then as you walk by and you hear someone say, there's Rosie, and you just know, like a little bell went off again for the Rosies, is these women that did such fabulous service for our country and got such little thanks in return are a tremendous example of how the nation responds to times of trouble. We put aside our differences. In the case of the Rosies, they took over building the arsenal of democracy that saved the world. Well, that counts for something. And I know a lot of veterans that would agree with this. You can't be in a bomber that doesn't exist. Those young men that flew those missions over Europe and all over the place, the Navy and the Air Force, those weapons were created by women. And without them, we would not have made it. And oh boy, are we due for a thank you.
Why this year? Why?
We were fortunate. I get them every year, but as again, I can't say for certain. I have some suspicions. Let's say that we all expect a higher standard of civility for our society, and I'll leave it at that. And let's say that perhaps we're not seeing that in all the places we would expect to see it. Well, why would we need to? The person we're most likely to expect it from is in the mirror every day. We hold that power more than anyone else. If we're looking at somebody else and being disappointed, we're welcome to do that. But as Rosie in the World War II Wets will remind you, we can do it. It's up to us to set that standard and maintain it. It's hard. It's not supposed to be easy, and there's a lot of folks that gave their lives to make sure we had that mistake to make and a way to correct it.
Where are you going next? What's on the
Well, luckily, schedule? I've got a good friend of mine, Mae Cryer. She's a real Rosie the Riveter. She lives just outside of Philly. She built B-17s and B-29s, and she's a wonderful young lady of a certain age, but she's diminutive, so she would actually be inside the wing of these bombers, while the Riveter, a female on the outside, would rivet from above, because a Riveter, as the backers are called, because we weren't Riveters, we're backers. I don't know that we know that distinction, but you have to have somebody on the other side of a rivet. So she would be inside the wing of these planes, moving in the dark from point to point, thousands of times to blow these fantastic machines that saved us. Well, tomorrow, after 70-some-odd years of waiting, she finally gets a ride on a B-17. She'll be flying for her first time. If you look up her name, Mae Cryer, you'll see an article about Monday when she got to taxi with it, which was a joy. But tomorrow, she finally gets her treat.
That treat for 91-year-old Mae Cryer was at the end of August. The sculptures were displayed at the Dutchess County Fair, and it was the first time Kleitch brought them to a fair. Lots of women stopped at the Rosie sculpture. Shelley DiMartino and her daughter Abigail took a gander.
I was just looking at it, and I was thinking, like, you know, the whole with women and empowerment, and just with my young daughter, you know, having good women role models, and it's just neat to see.
How old is she?
She's six.
Yeah. Abigail, what did you think of this?
I liked it.
Why?
Because it was really fun.
What do you think of when you see this woman?
That she's very, very brave.
Kathy Collins had a look.
Well, I'm the daughter of a World War II vet and a feminist, and I love to see anything to do with Rosie the Riveter. It's empowering, and I'm really glad to see that it's a presence here at the fair.
Christine Noble, whose nephew is the mayor of the city of Kingston nearby, stood in front of Rosie with 11-year-old Gabby Lutz after having visited the Embracing Peace sculpture.
I'm a daughter of a World War II vet, a stepdaughter of a World War II vet, and a daughter-in-law of a World War II vet. I also help with the honor flight, the Hudson Valley honor flight. I went on the honor flight 2014 as a guardian, and this is awesome. I have the goosebumps from, I have a red shirt on today because every Friday I wear a red shirt for the men and women deployed. My husband is a Vietnam veteran and our son was in the Air Force during the Gulf. So this is all very near and dear to me. I've been teaching my grandchildren all about the military and the men deployed and what it means and Rosie the Riveter, we just had a big talk. I have a big poster I was telling the other man of her at my desk at work, a big metal poster that hangs on the wall of her. And to see this is like, it was just almost unbelievable that they're displaying. I think it's beautiful that they're doing this.
So what do you think of Rosie the Riveter?
I think it's really cool. Like, I've never really seen a statue of her in like the same like person size. Like, yeah.
Yeah, like her size. She's
right, in real, like, kind of real life in a sense.
Yeah, I've never seen like her like that. I've never seen her sculpted before, actually.
Do you know what she stands for?
That America has strength. Is it kind of
about what we talked about earlier?
And the war.
And the women.
The women in the war.
They took over the jobs, right? Remember I told you?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What do you think about a woman like this who's standing? You know, there's another sculpture down there you saw with a man and a woman. And here's a woman who stands on her own. How important is that for you that there's not another person there?
Well, I think it's pretty cool that women can stand on their own and they don't need anybody to help them.
Here's Danny Masterson.
So I'm a national bugler for Spirit of 45. And I'm the New York State Director for Bugles Across America. And what that is we make sure that every veteran has a live bugler, and it's not a digital. We need something that's a live recording, a live rendition of taps. It's important for them to be laid to rest with their proper honors.
And how many?
I've done over 3,000 missions in about 10 years.
Ranging from where to where?
From New York, California. I travel all over.
Is there one that stands out, perhaps?
I sent taps on the USS Midway a couple years ago on the flight deck, and that was for Spirit of 45 Day, which was a beautiful, beautiful... I was the only one up on the flight deck. I was able to look down, and we had maybe 400 kids and adults spread out a ginormous American flag. And it's actually, if you know the USS Midway, there is a statue of the Embracing Peace, which is Dan, that Stuart Johnson had done. So I just, yeah, it's just amazing.
Is there anything to being a woman bugler? I don't know the industry, if you will, you know, but I...
There are more and more women buglers now. Unfortunately, it's kind of, you know, a man's area. But again, we're standing near the Rosie statue, and that just shows that a woman can do it.
The Rosie the Riveter Can Do bronze sculpture stands 5 feet 5 inches tall and weighs 450 pounds. Now we meet a Minneapolis artist who experiences synesthesia and uses an iPhone and fabrics to create symbolic dreams and layered shapes with meaning. KFAI's Dixie Trichel visited her studio to find out more.
I see star-craving beauty in everything. That is what I'm trying to portray in my work. My name is Candy Keene. I do wearable art and wall pieces, movement costumes, and I play with phone apps. Anything that I make, be it photo images or fiber work, it's all very layered, it's color intense, it moves. I'm cross-sensed. I guess it's called synesthesia. I think in pictures, not words. I see sounds and music. Numbers all have colors. I sort of smell emotions, taste what's happening. I see slightly out of time. It just lines up differently than way other people's line up. There's a world of us that mess with our phones. I take pictures outside when I'm walking in parks or in the neighborhood or down by the river. And then I fuse those together to kind of an altered reality of those. I use Image Blender app, Snapseed, Photo Blender, a bunch of different HDR apps. Instead of taking 3 images of the same subject, I take 2 or 3 images of totally different subjects. And the algorithm blends them together in a whole different world. Suzanne DePalma, a flamenco dancer choreographer, has been using my digital work for quite a few years. She wanted the woods to look foreboding in a Lorica play called Blood Wedding. With my iPhone in the forests of northern Minnesota, I was taking pictures and then I fused them together in the apps. And I did these projections that worked sort of like a movie behind the flamenco dancers, and I did the costume for the dancer who was the moon. I sew wearable art and dye my own fabric. Most of my pieces look as though that they're flying together or falling apart. One of my friends said every piece I make is a performance of its own. So I sometimes take on themes, or I sometimes take on processes. I try to make them look alive, but they actually need a body to do that. Next fall, I get to do the whole art set of Owatonna. My goal is to have the ceiling full of every kind of fabric. I'm starting to figure out how to do 10-yard repeats digitally. So one room will have the wearable art and the fabric across the ceiling, and another room will have the digital pieces. And I'm starting to work on some very large see-through pieces that would act like gobos, or that the light will go through and they'd make shadows. I'm going to try to see if I can light up one of them with lights inside, and I'll make them so they can be both worn and be hung. I am trying to show you how I see the world, because I see slightly out of time, like a penumbra, like a shadow on either side. And I'm hoping to help foster a wearable art show between the Twin Cities wearable artist community and the maker community of all kinds in Owatonna.
That was artist Candy Keene explaining to KFAI's Dixie Trichel how she sees out of time. And we're out of time this week. Thanks to Patrick Garrett for production assistance. Our executive producer is Dr. Alan Shartok. Our theme music is Glow in the Dark by Kevin Bartlett. This show is a national production of Northeast Public Radio. If you'd like to hear this show again, sign up for our podcast or visit the 51% archives on our website at wamc.org. And follow us on Twitter at 51% Radio. This week's show is number 1476.